Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish and satin? Or what that clunking sound from your dryer is? With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews, all on the app. Download today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
It's Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980, always live as well on the free Odyssey app. And, of course, streaming live on YouTube, too, at the Team 980. Yesterday, you're part one of our conversation with Sam Fortier about his reporting on the Commanders and RFK and going kind of the setup to how we got to the point where we are right now, where city council is the last hurdle for the team and the mayor's office to clear. They got it out of Congress. They came to a deal, and now they join forces to get this thing through city council and ultimately bring the Commanders back to the district. Part two of our conversation now on what that looks like, and then, like, literally what it looks like. Things like tailgating, things like PSLs. We get into it all. We'll put the full conversation up on YouTube and in our podcast feed. It'll also live in the Take Command feed as well, so wherever is most convenient for you if you want to listen to the full 45 minutes uninterrupted. But here you go, part two of our chat with Fortier on RFK.
Today's top story, from the perspective of someone who's there.
You are looking live.
This just in.
Not my beat.
So let's dive into some of those arguments, if you will, because I think, like, there's a lot of language here that gets real political, that is very, when I say political, it's politicians trying to sell constituents on this is the right thing for the city, this is the right thing, this is why what I'm fighting for, and thus why you should vote for me again, basically, right? But it does get into some value judgments of, like, I, as a district citizen, I'm willing to pay some extra taxes to have the stadium at the RFK site because I want it in the city. That is not just for, you know, what it can do revenue-wise. That's not economic reasons. I'm not an economist. I don't have to drive as far. I like having it close by. I like having it metro accessible. So, like, I personally am willing to pay that convenience and split the cost with my fellow citizens for not having the stadium in certainly Prince William County, but even in Landover. So there's that side of it. But then there's also kind of the claims that get made here on some of the financing where they're saying, oh, we won't have to introduce any new taxes because they're extending the already existing ballpark tax, or they're going to, you know, apply that same principle to the stadium. And some of the money is actually going to be generated from 2030 to 2032 once the stadium is open. And then you say, OK, well, that money is then paying back the rest of the bonds, and then the profits can start after that. The other big part is that, and this is where I don't know if you know the answer, but, like, I would want to ask a Charles Allen, a Phil Mendelson, these types of questions, is the argument for not building the stadium is you don't need a stadium to anchor a neighborhood, which is absolutely correct. And every economist will tell you it is better. Like, if you want better return for investment, build more housing, build grocery stores, build shops, build all those things, not a football stadium. But if you don't have a football stadium, you still have to build the roads, update the metro, do all the infrastructure work that the money that is being, or is the public money, would have to pay for. So, like, do we have any idea what an alternate plan would look like and how much that would cost taxpayers? Because I think that is a relevant thing, because they're trying to make it seem like, oh, well, if you build a stadium, it's going to be $1 billion of public money. And if you build no stadium, it's $0 of public money. But I want to know how all this stuff's getting done without the Commanders' $2.7 billion, even if a lot of that might go to the stadium, because that is a relevant figure in fact here as well.
Totally. And that's something that we don't have a lot of clarity on, because the mayor and the council have not put forward, which makes a lot of sense, because this is Plan A.
Right.
And they're going to go hard on Plan A until, you know, it gets voted down or it gets approved. But we don't have a great sense of, if the stadium was not there, you know, how many more housing units would there be? How much public investment would it cost? You know, people always talk about the Wharf 2.0, basically, or that's the model they want to use. And I think that, you know, there's very legitimate concerns, talking to my Metro colleagues, about when you go to the Wharf, there's some affordable housing, there's some like luxury housing, and there's like very little in the middle.
Yeah.
So when they promise, okay,
you also pay the RFK $8,000 to park.
Right. The RFK site, the city says, is 30% is going to be affordable housing. But then, like, how do you make sure that it's not 30% affordable and 70% luxury?
Right.
I think that that's like creating not just a community, but a well-balanced community. I think that's going to be something that the mayor's office is going to have to figure out too. And it's important to acknowledge that when they go public, that does not mean they have every single detail ironed out. The Commanders, for example, have not even hired an architect yet. But you have to go public because if you're going to have this many people involved, like, it's going to come out. And so you want to set the terms of, hey, this is how we want to present our idea. But basically, like, we know the big numbers, 2.7 private investment, just over $1 billion public investment. Here's where the sites are. Here's who would control these different districts. But we don't have all of the details yet. And that's something that, like, I think council members and citizens have a real opportunity to shape going forward, is, hey, what demands or what concessions can we get them to accept as they hammer out the finer points of this deal?
The other big thing that I find fascinating, I think you're a great person to ask about this, is the idea that this land is probably still locked up in Congress without the lobbying effort of the Commanders and the NFL. And while Josh Harris has said the right thing, which is, we think this land is best in DC's hands and letting DC decide what to do with it, they're not going to be this involved if they didn't think they were getting a stadium out of the deal. If they put in that much work and that much money to lobby and the effort and the time and all that kind of stuff, and then it's like, all right, now we got the land. You guys have fun with it. He's not going to be psyched about that. do you think that argument will carry any water with any of the city council folks who are currently no or currently undecided on this? That, like, you don't have this decision to make if it's without the Commanders. This land would still be locked up and rotting away for at least another year, and like it has been for most of the last 30 years.
I think that was one of Maryland's main arguments when they were raising objections to the RFK bill in the first place. They said, hey, like, you're doing this to get a football stadium, and we don't believe that using taxpayer funds in a football stadium, you know, or we don't believe that, you know, giving the Commanders free federal land, they're paying $1 in rent, we don't think that that is like a fair competition. That was like their main counter argument. And so when you would ask Charles Allen or any of these council members, like, They love that DC has control of the land. No one wants RFK Stadium as it's been for the last 20 years.
Right.
But it's all about taxpayer funding. So is there any argument to, like, the Commanders helped you out? I would say if I'm a council member and you ask me that question, I'm like, it's very nice that the Commanders, like, were interested in helping the city, you know, be at the table, and the NFL was interested in helping the city be at the table in this competition. But that does not mean that we have to then give you the land for $1 rent and then give you development rights, or that we have to contribute more than $1 billion of taxpayer money. And that's a totally legitimate, defensible position for a council member to take. And if I'm Mayor Bowser, it's like, they helped me, I'm going to, you know, work with them on a deal.
Yeah, that makes sense. All right, so I feel like that's most of kind of the hot button things that have been discussed the last couple of days. What else is interesting to you about this moving forward?
The whip count. Like, yeah. Are they going to pass this deal is fascinating to me, because it's fascinating to me because at the pep rally announcement, there were four council members, and right. I can go into those if you'd like, but there were four council members, and then there are three pretty vocal public, we do not believe in either a stadium or B taxpayer funds for a stadium, who have come out against it. And right now there are 12 members on the city council. It's 13 members, but Ward 8 is vacant. So you're going to have to get, you know, there's four, three against. That leaves five people still in, you know, still sitting. And you have to figure out how do we get three of those people. And actually, the exclusive negotiating window, as outlined in this term deal, is it ends the same day that the special election for the Ward 8 council seat is. So you're really going forward with, hey, there are 12 people, four are with us, three are against us. Can we get three of the five? And that, to me, is a fascinating question because it's going to probably determine, like, can they build the stadium or not?
Right. And we know that when Nats Park was built, for instance, there was a like a Nats Baseball Academy in Ward 7 that had to get built. I imagine there's going to be things like that. Like, what happens in other places that, whether it's support for youth football programs or Lord knows what else. Hey, all right, Events DC is involved. We need a new parking garage. Like, there's going to be stuff that gets thrown in here to make these people happy. Do we have any idea of those five, like what some of their demands might be? Or is there any particular one or two that are really interesting to you of what you think they might want based off their past histories or previous statements?
So the other five council members that we're talking about here, Robert White, Christina Henderson, Matthew Frumman in Ward 3, Zachary Parker in Ward 5, and Janice Lewis-George in Ward 4. Like, those five people, I don't know exactly what their demands will be. You know, they're playing pretty coy because right now in this negotiating period, the vaguer you are, that, you know, the more commitments you try to get. I mean, this is a thing that, like, will be impressed by the timeline or improved by the timeline. And so right now, like, we just don't know where they're going to be. But I got to tell you, Craig, like, one political phrase that surprises me every time I hear it, even though I've been writing political adjacent or political stories or working on them with my colleagues for 3 years now, is like, there's a term, pound of flesh. They always talk about, like, this council member has to get their pound of flesh.
Yes.
And it's so funny to me because it's like, people talk about, you know, football can be so brutal and violent and gladiatorial. And it's like, okay, well, this congressman is objecting to this deal so he can get his pound of flesh. It was so popular when we were talking about the Montana Senator, Steve Daines. It was like, oh, he's trying to get his pound of flesh. And to me, it always is like, oh, like that's a wild way to phrase that.
They just want the thing they can put in the ad.
Totally.
To get reelected. And that's like, ultimately, that's what this is about for so many of these people is like, yeah, they run for a reason. Yeah, some of them are in it for public service. Hopefully all of them are in it for true public service and they'll have the public's best interest at heart, but they also want to keep their jobs. And like, so much of politics and what gets done is about that. Who am I willing to piss off? Who am I terrified of pissing off because they might fund a primary challenge or a this or a that or a? It's just, it's all very silly. But you'd hope that you actually get what is best for the district, and that's what they're all going to say, right? They're all going to be like, I will do a deal that's good for the district. You know, and Mayor Bowser's like, well, we want the win. We want what's good for the district, good for the commanders, all this stuff. And it's just like, my question is like, what is good? And I think that's the thing that is hard. And, you know, you got all the marketing materials, if you will, here. And one of those pages says, oh, there'll be no new taxes and no new that. And like, and I saw there was the polling yesterday. JP Finley tweeted out the polling from, it's like Heart Research or something like that, which
team funded.
Yeah. As a team, it based off the percentages and the way the questions were written, very team funded, which fine. And it's like, do you support a stadium at RFK if there's no new taxes? And it's like, 85% yes. And it's like, no kidding. But that's not the right question. The question is like, can they actually do that? And I think part of the other question I have, Sam, is like, if they can't, who foots the bill for the extra? Because the reality is like, this is getting into national politics, but it is what it is. There's no way to separate these things. Like, Trump's tariffs could massively affect the cost of a stadium. Like, if you're talking about construction materials right now, and shipping costs and all these things, like, we truly don't know based off what deals he cuts with what countries and where the steel and the concrete and all of these things that go, the microchips for all the technology. Like, they're anticipating the stadium to cost X amount. What if the stadium costs 2X? And like, who pays for that? Like, those details are really important too.
Two things there. One, Terry Pegula owns the Buffalo Bills. And the Bills right now are building an approximately 65,000 seat stadium. And he actually addressed this the other day. He said, it's actually more expensive to build this stadium than we thought. And that's a huge deal. I don't want to be too out of my depth talking about what Trump's tariffs will mean. But I asked Josh Harris, who will pay for the cost overruns of this project, if there are any. Right. And he said the Commanders, 100%. So
okay.
That is a pretty clear-cut answer where if the tariffs or something else affect the cost
right,
of goods,
be a million
the commanders are going to cover it.
Yeah, I mean, just the natural way these things go. What was the last construction project you heard of that came in on budget? because of the current economic situation and the trends and the predictions, most economists and most experts agree that like this is something that is going to affect it. But I'm curious how... That was why I think that's like a really important caveat is it one, it's construction. It's probably going to come in overpriced. Two, the way construction costs are headed right now, if they design this thing, you know, in the last 3 months, what the construction costs are a year from now are totally unpredictable. Maybe they're better. Maybe they're not. We don't know. But understanding that kind of stuff is really important because so often in these things, it's like you get the private pledge and then the public has to foot the rest of the bill. If we know that the commanders are doing it going in, I think that's great. And it also speaks to what I feel like is almost a unique facet of this project too. They're not just going to build the stadium. Like they are responsible for the development of most of the stuff around the stadium, which actually, I don't want to say like, I don't know. I don't know how good the city is at building stuff. I don't know like who did the wharf and whatever else, but I do kind of trust the Harris Group to do whatever they do well. And I am fascinated to see how they develop these different districts around the stadium as Sam is holding up here.
Yeah, people can't really see it.
The stadium district, the riverfront district, you know, the recreation district, and like what kind of stuff goes here and how Commanders branded it is if Josh Harris and the Harris Group are, you know, the main constructors of the rest of this 180 acres.
I think that's a trend you're seeing across sports right now. Everybody loves to talk about the Battery in Atlanta with the Braves, but like Mark Cuban, when he sold the Mavericks, like said he understood the edge in the early 2000s. He understood media rights deals were going to drive an explosion in franchise valuations, which is why he felt like the Mavericks were a good bet. He sold it because he felt like he did not understand the next edge, which is real estate development. And if you go down, it's like, the Washington Commanders, the Atlanta Braves, the North Carolina State University Wolfpack like want to build these ancillary development projects. You want to control real estate in the same way that Stan Kroenke did with the Rams. Like there are so many of these projects, I think, at this point that are driving, like the land acquisition and development is driving the franchise valuations now as much as anything. And so, you know, what can Josh Harris do? I mean, they want to put bars, they want to put restaurants, they want to put, you know, mixed-use development at retail to, like, drive, you know, valuations up. And I think it also is a part of tailgating, which we can talk about. But to me, like, they have in their orbit people that know how to do those things.
Yeah.
You know, that was going to be a part of the Ted Leonsis deal in Virginia. So to me, land development goes part and parcel with owning a sports team these days.
It's the old McDonald's theory. McDonald's not a restaurant; they're a real estate company.
Exactly. Like I don't know if you saw The Founder, the movie.
Yeah, that's exactly.
But that's the scene. Like when BJ Novak is like, "You don't know what business you're in." I really think that's what's happening in sports right now.
Which is interesting too, because I think Keim asked Harris about this of like the investment side of it, and he was basically like, "Look, we want to do it right by the fans, right by the team, right by the city." And like, if it works out for us in the long term financially, like this is not the best way I could invest this money if I was purely doing this as an investment. But also being a landlord is a pretty good deal in the long run.
I was just say, Josh Harris is a smart guy.
Yeah. I feel like he's like this is a way, but also, you know, if you're going to put up $2.7 billion, like I'm not like, hey, go billionaires by any stretch of the imagination.
Hold on. But I'm going to clip that just so you know. I'm going to clip you going, go billionaires, and that's it.
You're going to cut off the I am not right before
exactly,
it?
Exactly. It's like.
All right, that was a great time to have Sam. Get the hell out of my house. No, but I'm certainly not go billionaires. But if you're going to put up $2.7 billion, it's not like you can't, you're not allowed to make any of that back. Like,
yeah, I mean, when you get 20 people in your ownership group to spend $6.05 billion on this thing, like people want their money back. Like,
yeah,
you know, Mitch Rales, Mark Guyne, Josh Harris all have an emotional connection to this team doing right by the city. But like, there are people who don't have that emotional connection who see this as a business opportunity. And it's like, where is my ROI?
Yeah. Well, the franchise value is going to go up and maybe they cash out after some of this. We'll see. But, you know, it's It's definitely going to be interesting to follow some of the pieces. Speaking of one of the other owners, I'd be remiss if I didn't bring this part up. Magic Johnson, not only an owner with the Commanders, he's an owner with the Washington Spirit as well. And this actually came out in a New York Times, or I guess the Athletic piece today, that Jason Wright, who, of course, former Commanders president, mentioned to the author of this article something that, frankly, I had talked with Jason about, you know, over the course of the last couple of years, which is that they had been in contact with the Spirit about, do we want to partner here? Is there an opportunity to do something similar to the Star in Frisco, where it's like, can we build a 10,000 seat stadium that is a practice facility for the Commanders and maybe an actual stadium for high school football or the Spirit or both of those entities? And I think now with the way the Spirit are rolling, 10,000 is way too small because they're selling out Audi Field on a regular basis. But I did see in the sheet is over here with all the logos on it of the different things they could do. Like the Spirit's logo is in there. And they talk about, you know, opportunities for women's sports. They talk about some of the other things they want to do with this space besides just having the Commander Stadium there and the kind of non-sports stuff. Do we know at this point what other teams may want to get involved? What other sports facilities, professional sports facilities, could go here? Or do we think that it's going to be limited to the Commanders? It is going to be them, stadium only, no practice facility, no nothing else. And then ultimately the rest of the development goes to the mixed use or the other mix of uses that Mayor Bowser and the council want to see out of this.
So I was just looking through the term sheet because in there it does say with the potential for a women's soccer team. It doesn't say the Spirit by name, but like you said, the Spirit logo is on there. I think the Spirit moving there for a practice facility or something or games, like that's definitely on the table. And
because I think they would love, even if it's just a practice facility, right? They're playing at Audi. Their players have to drive in an hour to games compared to they're in Ashburn. And like, Michelle Kang is a smart businesswoman, the owner of the Spirit. If you want to know more about that, go look at how she became the majority owner of that team. She basically pulled a coup, which was badass. But like bringing in Magic as someone, not as a, just as a big name and someone with some serious cash, but someone who is also a part owner of the biggest team in town, just in the middle of stadium negotiations, that to me felt like a shrewd move at the time. That is a compliment, and I would not be surprised to see them, and I'm also curious if there's anybody else who gets involved.
I think that they're definitely open to having more sports teams involved, but right now, Josh Harris said that he doesn't anticipate moving the team's practice facility from Ashburn. He said that they like it out there, and he said there's no plans to move the team's corporate headquarters from College Park. That could change. I know that, you know, Tom Sherwood, who you brought up, has been, you know, critical of teams that corporations that quote unquote play in the district, but they have their corporate headquarters where it's more tax advantageous in Virginia or Maryland. But Josh said basically that they like having touch points in all three jurisdictions, stadium, DC, corporate headquarters, Maryland, practice facility, Virginia. It seems to me like the practice facility will stay in Ashburn, at least for the foreseeable future, which is surprising to me because that land is so valuable for data centers. I thought they were going to cash out, but it does not appear to be that way.
Well, they've set up the paperwork if they want to change their mind.
They have, yes,
and
totally.
And that is something that's in the last year and a half that they got the right licenses or whatever to make sure that they can build the data centers out there in Ashburn where that land is stupid valuable.
Right. And so to me, like, there's a lot of questions, I think, that we're going to have going forward. I think they want to figure out, okay, let's get this thing passed. Let's figure out where we're going to be. And then, okay, maybe we do something like the Star. But I mean, the Star in Frisco, Texas, they have a lot more land around there than DC does. So it would be, I think, more logistically difficult.
It would move them out of Virginia. But in a lot of ways, I think the smartest place to put the new practice facility would be in Landover.
Yeah.
Like PG County is the wealthiest black county in America per capita. And so if you all of a sudden say, all right, hey, we're trying to recruit players and like you can live amongst your peers in a majority black league out there in PG County, they have 200 acres. Certainly Maryland they want to use that land for what's best for the community. But also if they can welcome or keep the Commanders in a pretty large presence, it's also, again, a lot closer to the city.
Still own that land, so it would just be repurposing things that they already own.
Right, they don't have to do any kind of purchase, so they could sell Ashburn, make a ton of cash, reinvest that cash in. And the thing is, on the Ashburn site, as you well know, as someone who still has to go there on a more regular basis than I do, That place, they don't have the room to expand. Like, they've already knocked down almost all the walls inside that they can. There's not really room because of the way, like, the hills are shaped for extensions on that. They'd run out of either parking or practice space. So if they want to have a modern NFL practice facility, they need to build a new one. And it would, to me, it would make sense to say, hey, giant tech companies that are flush with cash and running out of space in Ashburn, who's the highest bidder? Okay, you own this now. We're going to Landover. And so I don't know what that means for their relationship with Virginia, because I, like you said, or like you referenced, Josh said they like having it in all three, but that would not surprise me long-term if that was a play.
No, it makes a lot of business sense for some good business people. And I would say the other concern or question that I have about how the team approaches this, if they do ultimately get approval, is tailgating. I know that's been a thing that people have been really concerned about. They have 22,000 parking spaces at Northwest Stadium. They're going to go down to approximately 8 in DC. And as you pointed out, like, they say that they'll start with a little surface parking, but it'll all eventually be in structures. I asked a Commander's official, hey, how is this going to work? Like, will you be able to tailgate if you're there? And this person basically said, look, like, we will figure out how to make it a tailgating experience in a parking structure. I don't know. They did not have details on what that would look like. But if that doesn't work out, they can go to the area, the stadium district we're going to develop right in front of the area, and they can tailgate there, which obviously would be in team-developed, team-leased places. So what does tailgating look like? How do people get to the park, especially if there's only going to be 8,000 parking spaces? You're going to have to rely on metro, rideshare, bikes, things like that. But it's I think the logistics of this site, it's a totally fair and open question, because that's the inherent cost of centrality and, you know, getting the emotional spot that appeals to people.
I mean, this is anything in a city. Like, there are, if you want space, you got to go out to the suburbs. If you want centrality, you want convenience, like, you're going to have to deal with some other stuff. It's why, you know, living in the city and paying for parking every month in my own residence, like, it's not great. Like, it just is a part of it, though. If you want to have that convenience, you're going to have to pay for it. And so I get it. And there's some people that care a lot about the tailgating. But at some point, you have to make choices. And I think that's really a good place to end, is like, over the next 3 months, a lot of people are going to have to make choices. And for city council members, it's going to be, do you want the stadium here or not? And I think ultimately that is the leverage that the Commanders have. Of course, the city council members have their vote as their leverage on the other side. Anything else you want to add on the tail end here to wrap up?
One thing I've heard a lot from fans that I want to add is about personal seat licenses, PSLs, which are going to make tickets more expensive. I think Buffalo is actually, again, a great example of this, because in Buffalo, they're building a similar size structure, and they just introduced PSLs for the first time. About 20 of the 32 teams have them. Josh Harris said PSLs are just a part of building a new stadium in the NFL, because it's a big upfront infusion of cash. And the way PSLs work, it's like buying a ticket to get into a store to then buy something. You're going to have to pay for the right to buy your seat if you're a season ticket holder. And for the lower, you know, end tickets for the common fan, in Buffalo, you buy a 30-year PSL, and it's between $2,500 and $8,000. If you want
per
a more...
year.
No, or no, it's you buy it for 30 years. So you have a 30-year PSL, okay. $2,500 to $8,000. And if you want a premium seat or a club seat, it's between $15,000 and $50,000.
Wow, okay.
But if you're a fan who sits in the nosebleeds, but you love your seat and you've always had it, you know, if you pay in that range, you will have the right to buy your season tickets for the next X amount of years. We don't know what the Commander's cost will be. We don't know what the Commander's, you know, terms will be in terms of the length of the deal. But that is something that I've heard from fans, because it's like, hey, like, I've loved this team. I've been through the thick and thin. Can I now transfer my seats to the new stadium? Because, like, I was here when y'all were down, and now y'all are up, and I want to still be there.
Right.
So I think that's a question that I have. And I asked Josh Harris about the affordability, and he was like, look, I totally understand PSLs are a big thing people talk about. We will have an affordable game day experience, even in the context of PSLs. And to me, the question is, okay, what are the ticket prices going to be? What are the concessions going to be? Atlanta, I think, has been a leader in the NFL in making concessions affordable. Obviously, this stadium is such a big opportunity for the team, and to make money and to get their return on investment. But will they keep fans along for the ride, especially the fans that were there when they were down? Legacy fans that have had tickets since Griffith Stadium, a lot of, you know, some people definitely have been there that long. that's what I'm going to be watching going forward is does he follow through and put his money where his mouth is?
So far, so good. And basically everything Josh Harris has done for the Commanders. This is going to be a big test, though. Sam Fortier will be covering it in the Washington Post. If you read it, you get his T-shirt. That's not true.
Thanks for having me, Craig.
All right, that was Fortier with us. He was wearing a Washington Post T-shirt, which is why I said that there at the end. Again, if you want the full uninterrupted conversation, we'll put it up in our podcast feed and on YouTube at Craig Hoffman at the Team 980. Speaking of which, never read the comments on both the RFK situation and what the Commanders did in the draft. Next, here on the Team 980.
Looking for a job is lonely. Endless searching, phone calls that go nowhere, applications that vanish into thin air. What if you could link with dozens of local companies who are hiring right now with just one connection? That's Express Employment Professionals. Find us at expresspros.com. One connection, endless opportunities, and no fees ever for job seekers. Express Employment Professionals. ExpressPros.com.
Question for our listeners. Which automaker assembles the most vehicles in the country? Here's a hint. It's the same one that employs the most hourly workers in the country, and the answer is Ford. That's not a coincidence. It's a commitment. A commitment your local Ford stores share. And that is why Ford is now offering employee pricing across their full lineup of vehicles, which means you pay what they pay. So visit your local Ford stores today to take advantage of this great opportunity. Ford Motor Company. From America, for America.
Nerds. Today's episode is sponsored by Smart Travel, a new podcast from NerdWallet. Smart Travel doesn't just cover points and miles. They break down all the financial aspects of your trip, whether that's the best days to book, how to avoid hidden fees, or which fancy travel credit cards pay off, and which ones are just an expensive flex. If you want your travel budget to work harder, then dive into the best deals, products, services, and more with Smart Travel from NerdWallet, wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey everyone, summer is just around the corner and May's packed with reasons to celebrate. Whether you're firing up the grill for a backyard barbecue, soaking up the sun by the pool, or enjoying a long weekend with friends and family, Whole Foods Market makes it easy to kick off the season with great everyday prices on high quality favorites from fresh produce to grilling essentials. Let's dive into the savings and get your summer fun started right. Personally, I love how easy Whole Foods Market makes it to pull together a last-minute gathering. I was there recently picking up a few things for a cookout, and those yellow low-price signs are no joke. I grabbed their No Antibiotics Ever Ground Turkey and a few 365 by Whole Foods Market Organic Salad Kits. Honestly, so convenient and surprisingly affordable. The quality is still everything you'd expect, but I definitely felt like I was scoring a deal, which I love. Plus those yellow sale signs, I make a beeline for them now. Especially when I saw strawberries on sale, we went through two cartons in one day. Save on May celebrations with great everyday prices at Whole Foods Market.
It's no surprise that facial hair is personal. It grows from your face. Whether you're going smooth shaven or maintaining a beard, Dollar Shave Club offers shave and grooming products that are always high quality, but never overpriced. Visit DollarShaveClub.com and use promo code SHAVEUP for 20% off $20 or more.
It's Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980. We're always live as well on the free Odyssey app. We are streaming live on YouTube, too, at the Team 980. That is where you leave your comments for us, also at Craig Hoffman. And then on Thursdays at 5:30-ish, we do this.
We tried to warn them. They didn't listen.
Yeah!
Every week, the Hoffman Show goes into the belly of the beast.
We read those comments, baby!
Never read the comments.
All right, so the show is 3 hours long pretty much every day. It gets chopped up into pieces. We put that at Craig Hoffman at the Team 980, and then we let you have at it. We also read the comments on Take Command, and a lot of the comments when we get to the draft section will be from that. But Anthony, here on the show this week, we've obviously spent a good amount of time talking about the Commanders' attempts to return to D.C., to come home, if you will, to RFK Stadium. And believe it or not, people have opinions on that.
Really?
Yeah. No way.
Exactly.
Day 1973, said, was commenting on our chat with Tom Sherwood, who Tom is, of course, the WAMU political director, and he expressed in our interview that he hopes that the Commanders aren't a team that, quote unquote, plays in D.C. and only plays in D.C. He wants them to be in D.C., not just the stadium, but move your team headquarters here, and that way the corporate taxes you pay as an entity go to the District of Columbia city government. And DAE 1973 says, I agree to move the business unit of the Commanders to D.C., but the practice facility should stay in Northern Virginia. I don't believe that there's enough space to house the team practice facility at RFK. I actually agree with that. I agree with half of that, I should say. I think the best course of action for the Commanders is to, I'm sorry to anybody listening in Virginia, and I'm sorry to the Commonwealth, a state that I lived in and quite enjoyed my time in. This isn't personal. It's just absolutely logistical. I think the best bet for the Commanders is to abandon, from a space standpoint, is to abandon Virginia. And they would sell their land that they currently have because it is crazy valuable to tech companies. There's a limited amount of space in Loudoun County that is has the fiber wire in it that can house the types of data centers that these giant tech companies need. Their space is ready for that. They have the licensing that they got last year, and so eventually it would make sense to sell. The other reason it makes sense to sell is not just because they can make a profit, but because they kind of need a new practice facility. They don't really have space to expand the current one. They're maxed out unless they were to knock down a bunch of trees, which I don't even know if they have the right to do because I don't know where their land ends, like where those trees are. I don't know if they own all those trees or whether they would have to buy that land too. So actually, I don't even know if they have room to expand. But I certainly know there's no more room in the current space for more practice fields. If they want to expand the building, they cut the parking and they don't already have it. They already don't have enough parking. And if you look at teams that have built modern practice facilities, they have all these really cool, innovative spaces that are like quasi-classroom part field where they can do giant projection work and they can do all kinds of cool stuff. And they have bigger weight rooms and the Commanders don't have room for that. So they need a different space to house a world-class practice facility. And they own 200 acres in Maryland and Landover. And so 180 plus acres of that, let's give that to the city of Landover. Not give it to, but let's help the city of Landover, PG County, the state of Maryland develop that. Anthony, it just makes too much sense to move the practice facility to Maryland. Plus, Landover's way closer to RFK than Ashburn is. So from a player standpoint, it's an easier commute on game day. And last but not least, PG County's one of, if not the richest per capita black county in America. And if you're trying to recruit mostly black players, and that's just a percent of what the league is, to say, hey, you can come live amongst people who actually financially, culturally, socially are your peers, that seems like an appealing thing to do as opposed to being out in Ashburn where let's just say that's not quite the case. Not that Loudoun County doesn't have decent diversity to it, but it is a different vibe in Loudoun County and in Ashburn. So it just, to me, it makes all the sense in the world. And then as much of your business that you can center at the stadium, great, because I do think that it's right that if you're going to play in D.C. and you're going to ask for $1 billion to help support the funding of the stadium, even if you're putting in close to $3 billion of your own, of course you want to pay your corporate taxes in D.C. In terms of being a good citizen. But I think logistically to move the entire operation there is just you're now taking up way too much space in a city where there just isn't a lot of space.
Yeah, Landover wouldn't be too bad. Literally, it's right down the street. You take Central Ave, you hit RFK.
Right.
Also, it's sort of kind of like on the border. And then also, when I think about Kevin Durant's documentary, Something in the Water, like he talks about how there were a lot of, African-Americans in the D.C. area. And guess where they end up getting pushed out to? PG County. So I think the points you made are like super valid.
Yeah, so it's logistically, there are things that are really important from a baseline level because you can't proceed without them, aka the space. And again, they don't have to buy any. They're spending so much money. Not that I'm feeling bad for any of these incredibly rich people who can get bonds and do all these, play all these financial tricks to have this not be crazy. But like, let's not pretend like we're taking spending billions of dollars for a stadium that we're all going to go to and enjoy lightly, or a practice facility, whatever. But it just, why would you have to buy land if you already own 200 acres? Build the new facility there and make some of it and be able to pay for it with, you know, sell your current house to buy your new one. That's the best way to go about that business, it would seem to me, especially if you already own the land. All right, next up in the comments section, talk about affordability. Our guy Blaine Bowling 3303 says, man, with the cost of living going through the roof as we speak, I don't know how we're going to be able to afford seats and how affordable seats will be attainable. He's talking about our conversation with 48 that everyone just heard in the end of that with the PSLs. And this is where I struggle, because I think PSLs are mostly a scam for owners to get more money out of fans, but people buy them. That's capitalism. And the reason you do PSLs is because it's almost like a signing bonus for the owner, right? And players like signing bonuses because they get cash right now. For a team that, or an ownership group that's spending billions and billions of dollars, if they then sell a bunch of PSLs, they can make an influx of cash by getting that PSL money up front, or at least some of it. You know, some of these come with payment plans. There's a bunch of different ways you can do it. But I understand why teams do them. And the simple answer is capitalism, because they can and people will buy them. And I do hope that Josh Harris keeps his promise that he's going to do his very best to make it as affordable as possible for people, that those PSLs don't become the thing that cause people to give up their tickets that they've been holding on for and it for a very long time.
Nah, definitely. Especially the conversation you and Sam were just having. Like, it's been my entire lifetime, like 30 years, man, since we've been like in a situation where we are. So definitely just being able to like be loyal to the guys that were loyal to you would make all the sense.
And it's not Josh Harris's fault that the current economic situation is what it is. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of factors. It's not me like trying to be shady towards any particular politician or thing. Or what, like, there's a lot of stuff in the global economy that is happening that is causing our current cost of living situation, and you know, prices to be where they are and housing to be where it is and all that kind of stuff. And at the end of the day, like, this is capitalism, though. It's the market. And so if, despite all that stuff, people are still willing to pay, then people are going to get priced out. And if enough people just say, no, I'm not buying that, or I can't afford that, then they're going to have to bring prices down to what people afford. And as an individual consumer, you have to take the risk of, if I don't buy it, is someone else going to? Or is everyone else going to be in the same boat I am, and thus the prices will come down to me? Markets, capitalism, economics, sports radio. Woohoo! But that's all it is. Last one on this from Aide Smith, RB7CE. Anybody opposing this plan? Do they have a better plan themselves? The site needs to be developed, and it has been an eyesore for 30 years, so shame on them if they don't support it. This is not exactly correct. I mean, obviously, it has been an eyesore for 30 years, and they do need to develop it. But we have proven over time as a society that you do not need a stadium to anchor a neighborhood. Pick any neighborhood in D.C. that's not Navy Yard. There's no stadium there, or you know, downtown. There's no stadium there, like the 14th and U or Shaw neighborhoods, or Georgetown, or the Wharf, which is one of the best recent examples of how you can build something new and not have it have a stadium anchor. Like, pick any D.C. neighborhood that is not the one right around Capital One Arena and Navy Yard, or pick any neighborhood in the country that is that in a major city, or pick any suburban neighborhood. Like, you don't need a stadium to anchor a neighborhood, to have it be economically viable, to have people live there, to have people shop there, to have people generate tax revenue there. That said, you have to make a different calculation in D.C. because if you don't put the stadium there, it's not going in D.C. It's going in Maryland. And what is the opportunity cost? That's something that economists would look at and have to tell me. But a lot of them still think it's better off. You're better off economically doing something else. It's just then, like, what do you actually want out of the stadium? And then how do you, or what do you actually want in terms of your city? Do you want the city to have the stadium or not? And what else can you do around it to try to ease some of the pain in terms of housing and the budget in D.C., which certainly needs the money. And then we end on economics again, Anthony.
Gotta love some good econ, man.
Gotta love it. All right, what about some draft talk? Let's get into some draft talk here on Never Read the Comments. Jeff Richardson, 27-28. I really like the athletes they drafted, they, of course, being the Commanders. But an edge rusher would have made the team more complete for a Super Bowl, or more complete to compete for a Super Bowl now. Improving the offensive line is never a bad idea, especially with a guy like number five behind center and the defensive fronts in our division. But I thought the LT trade was enough of an offensive line improvement to look elsewhere in the first round. AP is a hell of a lot smarter than me, though. Ian Rocks, 44, says, there are two ways to improve your pass rush. Yes, you get better pass rushers. That's awesome if you can. But you can also improve your coverage, which they did in a serious way. Fans get so hung up on a specific position of a personal player favorite, but have no idea how to truly build a roster. They knew they needed to protect the best player on the team, and they did it. By the time they picked at 61, Trey Amos at cornerback was better than any edge they take. So you take Amos. It's not really that hard to understand, but they will keep beating the same whiny drum. I thought it was. I thought they showed the trust their board strategy and the talent their talent as evaluators. Also, not sure why people are saying Connerly is not ready to play right now. I like what this team has done, and I do not think they are done either. One more before I chime in from Anthony. Anthony Etheridge, not Anthony Haney. Anthony Haney. Anthony Etheridge, 415. I really wish my fellow fans would stop being so short-sighted. Yes, you draft players in the early rounds that you feel can contribute immediately, but you don't reach on players because you have a need for this season. That's how you end up drafting Jamin Davis and Jahan Dotson. Let Adam cook. He's earned that much. I think these three comments go well together because, to Jeff's point, it would have been nice if they got an edge rusher because clearly a premier edge rusher is something they need. But, like Ian says, they've done other stuff to help the pass rush. And he says, as Anthony Etheridge says, they trust their board. I can't stress this enough. They are just flabbergasted, seemingly, that they got Josh Connerly. They had a significantly higher grade on him than anyone else that they could have taken at 29. And then one of the players that they would have taken if Connerly wasn't available to them, that was kind of in that next bucket of players, was apparently Trey Amos, who they got at 61. And it sometimes I think we overthink this stuff, or we think they think through this stuff in a way that's very different than the reality goes, Anthony. I think people get way too caught up in mock drafts, or and it actually is one of my least favorite types of comments in the lead up to the draft. You got to go edge. No, you don't. No, you don't. Nobody goes into the draft unless they have a top, like, 1, 2, 3 pick. And last year, the Cardinals could do it at 4 because they were fairly confident that the first three picks were going to be the three quarterbacks. But if you have 1, 2, nevertheless, 28 picks ahead of you, you don't go in, good teams, don't go in targeting a position. It's stupid. It's a way to draft a player in a spot that player has no business drafting. You have to just say, who are the people that can help us? And one, it's because that's how you get the best players on your team, and ultimately your team needs good blue chip level players to succeed at the highest level. And two, the draft isn't for one season. And so if you just take the best player available year over year over year, chances are the best player is not going to be at the same position, unless it's the 4 years in a row that the Commanders took D linemen, or the 4 years in a row the Detroit Lions took wide receivers back in the day. But chances are that target is going to bop around, and then all of a sudden you got a bunch of first-round picks on your team at a bunch of different positions, all on different timelines contractually, and you can keep a bunch of them. And then you look up in 6 years, and you're the Philadelphia Eagles, and you're holding the Lombardi Trophy. That's how it's done. You invest in the lines for sure, but you take good players. And if you don't get that, man, I got nothing for you.
Yeah, I mean, I think that also just goes back to, like, even when we were doing our mock drafts and you took Emeka Ogbuka, like, on a lot of people's boards, like, I guess, like, fans anywhere of the team, we just wanted to go edge. Like, Lynette and I, we went edge. We were thinking, need, like, we need to get our room better, but I think, to your point, like, you were really thinking, like, who's the best player available? How can they also be of assistance? And edge wasn't the only position of need that we needed or that we had anyway.
Yeah, no, for sure.
At MLBShop.com, you can get all the latest officially licensed merchandise for you and your family. But if you really want to level up your game, you can grab something for your dog walker, your Pilates instructor, your swim coach, your neighbor, your accountant, your gardener, your best friend, your bandmate, your boss, your kid's teacher, your mailman. Visit MLBShop.com and stock up on officially licensed on-field merchandise from your favorite teams.
Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Every morning brings a fresh new energy. And no matter what the day holds, we come to the Today Show for all of it.
We get the best start to the day because we start it together.
Watch the Today Show weekdays at 7 a.m. on NBC.
Never read the comments. A couple more here as we wrap up. I'm going to guess this is Mr. T-Hud03 as opposed to Mr. Thud03.
T-Hud.
T-Hud. T-Hud. Salute. I think we're getting caught up on having an edge rusher. Luvu was second team all pro. Dante Fowler had double digit sacks. Although I don't think that's correct. I think Wagner was second team all pro. Frankie was not. But he was in part second team all pro because of some of the blitzing work that he did. Dante Fowler had double digit sacks, but we couldn't set an edge to save our lives. And teams were just running right up the middle on us. I think the combination of an improved run defense up front and a better secondary will help getting home to the QB. AP has dynamically shifted this roster in just 2 years. Amazing. And that last point is what I think is really important. This was always a multi-year project. That doesn't change because you do really well in year one. Maybe you're farther along than you thought. But especially when it comes to getting blue chip players, it takes time. And they did themselves a disservice, air quotes, by making the NFC Championship game because it put them at 29th in the draft. And they're hoping they just got a blue chip offensive tackle and that guys like Mike Teist, former NFL head coach and offensive line coach before that, who had Josh Connerly as the number one offensive lineman in this class, are correct. And then all of a sudden you're like, okay, we got Jaden in year one, blue chipper. Connerly in year two, blue chipper. See who they get next year. And that takes time because those players are so rare and so few and so far between. I also do think that by being better in the run game, which guys like Dietrich Wise will help with, guys like Eddie Goldman will help with, I think Javon Kinlaw, if deployed properly, could help with. Johnny Newton in year two should be better. If they have more discipline and are better edge setters in the run game, you wind up with more third and longs, and that's going to help your pass rush too. All right, little bit of fun at the end here.
Quick correction, though. Luvu was second-team All-Pro. He just didn't get the Pro Bowl nod.
They were both second-team All-Pro?
Yeah.
Dang.
Both of them, Austin Ekeler and Terry McLaurin.
My apologies to Frankie Luvu. Your next beer that you chug at a hockey game is on me.
I think he loved that.
Yeah, based on how much he loved the one he chugged last night, I'd imagine so. That dude is electric. All right, last but not least, our fun at the end. We were talking with Fortier about and Sherwood about how the legislative sausage is made, and Jeff Richardson goes, legislative sausage, new band name, called dibs on it.
Wow.
Someone's fantasy football team is going to be called Legislative Sausage this year in D.C.,
I think I might be the third person to do it.
I think it might just be Anthony Haney. And then last but not least, writing the axe. Wow, Craig blocked our team account. Not a nice guy. 2:35 puts a timestamp in there for some reason. Had to sign into our personal account to make a comment. Anyway, a few of their UDFAs will make the team, in my opinion. It was so important that he switched accounts. But also, here's my question. If you made it this far, I need you to leave a comment on this video. And or if you're listening to us live, like DM me, email me, something. Should I block this account? Because they've already earned one block. I don't just block people willy-nilly. I block people if you're not worth listening to or if you say something offensive. And so if they've already admitted that they've been blocked once on some other account, should I just automatically block this one? Or should I give them a second chance, even though I'm apparently not a nice guy?
I think you should give him another chance.
Okay.
I'm a nice person, though.
Let's see what the public thinks. Do I block this person again? I feel like if I put this out there now in this forum, people will be nice. If I put a poll up on like Instagram or something, people would just bludgeon them because that's what the internet is. It's It's not safe out here in these internet streets, Anthony.
No, don't put them up there.
No, I'm not going to do that. Not going to do that. All right. That is Never Read the Comments. When we get back, we'll talk a little bit more about some NBA stuff and why my least favorite basketball player keeps reminding us that he's my least favorite basketball player.